Hello and good evening, everybody. Welcome to BIB Radio. I am your host, Cece Harry, and I believe I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Robert 11X. Are you there, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. How's it going? It's going great. Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2017. And again, like I always say, I can't believe how fast the time is going by. So Robert, let's get right into it. Today we are going to talk a little bit about the trade show. Then we're going to listen to a clip by Mr. Earl Nightingale, like we were talking last week about being inspired as an entrepreneur. And we listen to Earl Nightingale all the time. Of course, we know that there's some information there that helps us. So we have to be inspired each and every day in this thing called entrepreneurship. And then in the second hour, we will be joined by Miss Leia Gavin. I'm going to read her bio here for you really quick. She is of Exit Realty Franchise. She's an Exit Realty franchise owner, professional speaker, and author. Leia Gavin grew up with a number of statistics working against her. She was a latchkey kid. Divorced parents. She was raised by a single mom. She became a single mom. She never grew up around conversations about how to handle money. These factors were a recipe for a cycle of childhood poverty and government assistance. But her mother was determined not to let her children fall through the cracks. She kept them focused. She kept them close to home, and she kept them in school. After seeing firsthand the financial devastation of a divorce caused her mother, Leia went on a quest to get educated and help others. After 17 years of working in the industry and earning both her bachelor's and master's degree in finance, she developed her own training and coaching programs. Leia blends the spiritual lessons of biblical financial stewardship with the practical lessons of handling money in today's confusing economic environment. Her teaching and training programs are designed to walk you through the process of building assets, creating wealth, and leaving a legacy. So again, she's of Exit Realty Sun City. And she's got a new book. It's called 10 Smart Money Moves, How to Master Your Money. And you can get that on Amazon.com, or you can order it directly from her site. So we'll be excited to talk with her in the last hour. And she'll also be talking to us about estate planning. We keep bringing that up because so many people do not plan for the future. We are in a scramble. Economic times are still a little bit confusing. But if we listen to the experts and just start planning, we'll be more successful. What do you think about that, Robert?
I totally agree. Totally agree.
Okay, well, perfect. So let's get right into the show. It's 6 o'clock, or I'm sorry, 6 minutes into our show, and we definitely don't want to run out of time tonight. But as we have talked about in many shows, Robert and I are headed for a trade show. So, Robert, talk to us about this trade show.
Well, this one here is the ASD, it's General Merchandise Trade Show, and that's happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, from the 18th of this month to I think it is the 22nd of this month. So it's like 4 days in total, Sunday through Wednesday. And in the place you will find everything from every item you use in your house pretty much. They even have a grocery wholesalers in there. I mean, from food to appliances, small appliances, recreational stuff, scooters and stuff like that, manufacturers of these products, and as well as distributors, those people who sell pallets of returned items to stores, they'll be there. So it's just a variety of items that will be at this show. All the latest and some of the, newest stuff is going to be out, like technology. You'll see it's not like the CES, the big electronic show, but there's going to be some of those vendors at this show as well. It's just really, really a great place to go to if you're into the general merchandise type of business. I always suggest that you go twice a year. The show is held twice a year. You can never exhaust the amount of information, the wisdom that you get out of attending the show. You never know who you're going to meet or what's going to be said to you that could just catapult your thinking into a whole nother realm of things. So, you know, that show happens twice a year. It's just wise to go to that show twice a year.
Well, the thing is, this is going to be my first trade show. And I think this is a very good time to tell the people why they should go to trade shows if they are in any type of industry. Because, you know, we were consulting with someone and they have a product, but they still didn't understand why they should be at the trade show. So can you tell them why they should be at the trade show?
Somebody that has a product, for someone that has a product and it's new to the marketplace and you need to get that product out to many people from all over the United States and abroad, this is a great show to attend. Hold on 1 minute. You all have to excuse me. CC, someone is knocking at my door.
Okay. Okay, just go ahead and pause it. So basically, we're going to go to the trade show. And like I was saying before, we were consulting with a client. And the client has a product, but they didn't quite understand why they should be at the trade show. And see, the trade show is something that is on a whole nother level. You know, we've talked about the trade shows before. So all you have to do is go to Black Talk Radio Network's website and then go in the old shows or the past shows for BIB Radio, where you'll hear Robert talking about the trade shows. There's some entitled trade shows. But, you know, he's emphasized the whole time that we've been on radio, which has been about a year, the importance of going to trade shows. So if you have a product, this is something that you want to look into so that you can get it out on a worldwide level. Sometimes we think about just, let's say if I had a product, I might try to go to like Costco and pitch it that way. Well, Costco is a very, very large organization. It's nationwide. It might even be worldwide. I don't know. But when you go to a trade show and you're pitching your information at the trade show, there are many people from around the world that will be interested in what you have. So you're selling it at a larger, you know, on a larger level versus just something here locally in the United States. Even if you don't have a product or a service or anything like that going, we would advise that you go ahead and decide to take a trip to the trade show because it broadens your horizons. It allows you to think outside of what it is that you know, even about entrepreneurship. You get to meet many different people that you probably would never meet, especially if you live in a small town or whatever. You know, you meet many different people of diverse cultures. Sometimes you might need an interpreter because some of the people don't speak very good English. Now, I'm just speaking from what I've seen because I have not been to a real trade show per se, but I kind of have a perspective on how it is. I'm just kind of watching the videos that Robert has done, and so I'm like really excited to go. If you all want to go, or if you still like, if you're listening now and you want to get some information on how to go, we're happy to do that. We'll inform you on how to do that. So. You know, I don't think it's too late for you to go. And like you said, the trade show is twice a year. So you definitely want to kind of look up the information, even go on YouTube and see what you can find out about trade shows. But again, I'm excited to go.
Yeah, this Scotty, trade shows are like Going off of what Robert was talking about, if you are an inventor and you got this product that you've made for the public, well, if you don't own a whole bunch of stores, I mean, of course you can distribute your product online. But if you want it in a physical box, shelves, then that is how you find distributors, is at trade shows, because if I'm not mistaken, don't retail owners, you know, go to trade shows to look for stuff they might want to put on their shelves?
Absolutely. That's the larger scale that I was talking about, you know, whereas like the person I was consulting with, they were interested in getting their items in Party City. And I'm like, okay, well, what are you going to do for that? I mean, you're going to like spend your time trying to talk to the corporations, the corporate people at Party City, whereas you want to be in more than just Party City, because Party City is going to be at the trade show. So if you have your items at the trade show, Party City and other party suppliers or distributors are there, you're going to have all eyes on you at that point versus just being at the mercies of just Party City. You know, possible when you are trying to market your product. And that's what trade shows do.
And I just posted on my Facebook page, that is Robert 11, E-L-E-V-E-N-X, Miner, M-I-N-E-R, on Facebook. A couple of YouTube videos of the ASD trade shows, about 30 minutes worth, for those who may not quite get what this is or the magnitude. That the videos could probably never, ever show you the magnitude of the show. I just don't, I can't even imagine that being possible. But once you physically get to, if you haven't been to Las Vegas, their convention center by far is, the Las Vegas Convention Center is the biggest convention center that I personally have been to. And I haven't been all over the United States at convention centers, but there's a reason I say it's probably the biggest convention center in a city. Because of the magnitude that Las Vegas is in the whole, on the whole planet Earth, being the gaming capital of the world, everything is for travelers, for businesses, everything about Las Vegas is cost efficient. We had a guest on the show from Dominion Airlines, and he does this charter business with these real luxury airplanes. I think that was last week. And I asked him a question. I said, you know, is it cheap to land a plane in Las Vegas? And I asked him that question because I had been informed of that about Las Vegas and some years back. My partner in Vegas told me this is why Vegas is the way it is, because everything about doing business in Vegas is cheap. Vegas has the most hotel rooms in that one city than any city throughout the whole planet Earth, you see. So everything about Las Vegas is business friendly. Even to set up a corporation in Nevada is totally private. You can't go and look at a corporation's entities in the, that's set up in Nevada and find out who the members of the corporation is. That's only in Las Vegas. Now, in Delaware, it's almost like that, but it ain't as private. But it does have a great level of privacy as well.
I was going to say that, because I know that when people get their LLCs, they do get them in Delaware, and there's a reason for that. That's something that definitely has to be studied. Delaware versus Las Vegas, and Las Vegas versus Delaware, I guess. Because that's not some information that I know about, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so this, and see, when you look at the history of Las Vegas, I mean, people always think that the smartest minds are the college-educated minds, and that's just not the case here. You know, Vegas was put together by bold men that had testicular fortitude. You know, that wasn't afraid to die for what they wanted to have get accomplished. And some died trying to build that city the way it is today. And those were quote unquote gangsters. So in setting that thing up, they knew that they encountered certain issues with taxes and this, that, and the other. So why wouldn't they make that city have total privacy for the people that wanted to come do business in it? It just all makes sense when you look at the history of the city. When you look at the magnitude of the attraction of how many people come in and out of Vegas. No other city in the United States has that kind of tourist attraction. 40,000 people a month, over 4 million people a year are in and out of Vegas. That's just so you're not getting that in any other city. So food is cheap. People think that the cost of living is high in Vegas. It's not. It's really everything is just beyond disbelief. It's unbelievable because you go there. When I go there, I mean, I eat good for cheap. If you Uber or what's that other service they got? Uber.
Lyft.
If you Uber or Lyft, man, you all over the place for nothing. You see, so this is why it's such the place to be for trade shows.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that's really, really into what they do, and you know, that really understand the power of the knowledge of your industry. Because I just shared with somebody earlier today, or yeah, it was yesterday, if you're in an industry, you in that industry, then you should want to know or at least be able to listen intimately to the top players of the industry.
I agree.
I was talking to a guy at the flea market yesterday. We're talking about real estate. And he was saying, Rob, I got these properties and renting. And I said, well, that's good if that's what you want to do. I say, but if that's where your mind is, he goes to trade shows. I say, how many trade shows other than this ASD he's going to be there too? I say, how many trade shows other than that have you been to? He said, well, I haven't. I say, well, you just got through talking about real estate, right? He said, yeah. I say, well, why don't you go and Google real estate trade show, multifamily trade shows in Las Vegas. I said, now, you may not be at the level of a guy that's got 1,000 units, but that don't mean you can't think like a guy that got 1,000 units. And the only way you're going to even know to think like him is to be in the environment where you can listen to people that have that type of thing going on, and they're sharing their ideals with one another.
Right, right. Because how would you know to even think on another level unless you see someone who is at another level? You know, and I was listening to you, well, we were talking the other day about people in their industry that are not savvy concerning what is going on. Even today when we went to the dry cleaner, because we went to the dry cleaner and this new dry cleaner, they have one price and their turnaround time is super quick. If you drop your clothing off by 10 o'clock, they'll have your clothing done by 5 o'clock. Right now, the dry cleaner does not have an alteration services, but they are incorporating that into their business. So that's cutting edge right there versus the old timey dry cleaner, the old school, I should say, dry cleaner.
We went there too. Right. We did both of them in one day.
Right. We went there too. We went to the old school people and you saw like bins and bins of clothing and just work to be done. It looked like a sweatshop in there. Whereas the first one who has the fast turnaround service, who are like ahead in the industry, it was an open book. You could see all the way to the back. You could see everything going on in there. I mean, it didn't have that smell that you, like a chemical smell. It didn't have all that. So the new one versus the old one, the new one, I'm sure they go to trade shows. I'm sure they are up on game and up on what the newest thing in the technology of dry cleaning is because they're able to have a fast turnaround versus the old one. Now, what I said was, although the new one is great, wonderful, and man, that's just great, you know, the way that they do business, I'm sure that the old dry cleaner will still have a pretty large following because, you know, you have older people who are used to the old way and then they have established themselves in the community. And so therefore their business will probably keep going. I don't think they'll get X'd out of the business, but the new one, new one is good. Huh?
Do you still own any cassette tapes?
No, the question is, do I still own any music CDs? And yes, I do.
Music CDs, that's what took over the cassette tape. When the cassette tape, before the cassette tape, it was the 8-track.
No, I don't have 8-track. I don't even see the 8-tracks in the thrift store anymore, so.
People still trying to buy vinyl. They just trying to make a comeback with the vinyl record player, but that ain't going to fly.
Right.
So the thing of it is in a society where people like things done fast, even though you disqualify yourself.
Uh-huh.
You disqualify yourself because even though you can still see the service part of it, that old mom and pa, that's what they like. They can be entertained by your personality all day long, but when they need it right away, that ain't going to fly with them.
Oh, no. No, it's not going to fly right away. But I know, like, you know, when we walked into that place and we had the conversation with the young lady at the older place, I mean, it was just totally unacceptable. Not that she had bad customer service, but they weren't ready for our business. You know, you have to be ready for business to do business. She wasn't ready for business. I mean,
and it only takes one experience like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is,
this too. Uh-huh. Now, you know, at our business, we thrive on customer service.
Oh, yeah.
Those customers are only loyal to price.
Right.
And it's so unfortunate. See, so in today's world, what has to happen with businesses is first, you got to be ready for business. You got to be ready to conduct business at all times. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Parallel to number two is you got to know your business well.
Right.
You got to know your business. It's just like when people come in about our prices. The first thing I tell them is, or I ask them, do you have a smartphone? Because if you got a smartphone and you think my prices are high, Google Amazon.com or Walmart.com. And if my price is higher than their price, I'll meet that price that big multi-billion dollar company can have.
Right. Right. I did say that the other day, and the guy, I said, you know what? Do you have a smartphone? Why don't you take it out so you can compare the price? Because this $4, I guarantee you, is much lower than the other store. And then he was like scared. He was like, I'm sure you're right. And I was like, yes, I am right. But if you would like to check, I'll stand right here while you check. And he ended up buying what he needed to buy.
And he's a rare one because most times they don't.
Right.
Most times they don't. So the point is, even with, yes, I love small business. I'd rather patronize small business. You know, I got to have a confidence in a small business that, okay, it may not have been right today, but can you make me feel confident in knowing that you're going to make this, you're going to get this together, because if I need it now, I need it now. You know, I mean, I really do. And then we went into some places where I had to get some suits
alteration. Alteration, not authorization.
Alteration. Thank you.
Yes.
I can get it out, but
it's okay.
Yeah, but you know, so now you look at, you know, cost. Now, again, these companies, these cleaners, they're sucking blood out of you to get something. I paid $50 for one suit to get done. You know, sleeves altered and the pants legs altered. Okay, some would say, well, that ain't bad, but I thought that was a bit much, personally, for that suit to get done. And it inspired me to ask the lady, can I come and volunteer to work so I can learn how to do it? You know,
and she's like, no, black man, we don't want you in here with us, no.
But the big, you know, but the big game down the street, when they bring alteration to the table, then that's gonna be a game changer. See, you're not gonna have a choice but to change how you do things because the facility is nice, mm-hmm. the price is right.
Right.
And the customer service is excellent.
Right, right. And you know what? We went into one more place. You know, we saw the day spa place. And we're like, let me go see what the prices are like in the day spa. What does this look like? Went in there. And those people were ready to go, not for just a massage, but a couple's massage. Okay. And the price was inexpensive. It wasn't a sweatshop or anything. What do you call it? I don't know. One of those weird things. It wasn't one of those, but right. Those women were in there and they were ready. Okay. They were ready for business. And that's what you have to be. There's no way you can be ready for business if you're not preparing yourself for the next level. So in trade shows, that is what you are getting. You know, you may not be ready for these zillion dollar deals or whatever, but if you're working on something now, you never know what can happen tomorrow. So it is very important that you attend these trade shows, that you stay linked in with us, because we definitely can help you and mentor you through these experiences. We're excited to do so. Again, me, myself, this is my first real trade show. I went to a hair trade show, but that was 100 years ago. But this is my first trade show. We will have lots of information available for our listening audience. And I'm just excited about the things to come. Now, what we have to do is we're going to actually segue into the next piece because our engineer is, he's multitasking. But we want to make sure that you all have the appropriate information concerning the trade shows. Let's see what else. Yes. We can go ahead and get into our clip. It's Earl Nightingale. And he is going to give you some motivation for a few minutes, and then we'll come back and talk about that. So, Scotty, if you're there, go ahead and play the clip.
I want to tell you about a plan you can follow, which takes only a little time each day, follows results out of all proportion to the time spent. For a moment, consider the things your mind has brought you. Everything you have, your work, your relationship with your family and others, your philosophy of life, all is in your mind. Now consider the estimate made by experts. You have probably been operating on your mental capacities, much less. Dr. Herbert Otto, psychologist, educator, and chairman of the National Center for the Exploration, reminds us that many well-wishers, the late Abraham Maslow, Margaret Mead, Gardner Murphy, O. Spurgeon English, and Carl Rogers, subscribe to the hypothesis that man is using a very small fraction of his capacities. Margaret Mead quotes a 6% figure. Herbert Otto writes, my own estimate is 5% or less. Neurological research at the UCLA Brain Research Institute points to enormous abilities latent in everyone by suggesting an incredible hypothesis. The ultimate creative capacity of the human brain may be infinite. To use the computer analogy, man is a vast storehouse of data, but we have not learned how to program ourselves to utilize these data for purposes. Yefremov, the eminent Soviet scholar and writer, says, man under average conditions of work and life uses only a small part of his thinking equipment. If he were able to force our brain to work at only half its capacity, we could, without any difficulty whatever, learn 40 languages, memorize the large Soviet encyclopedia from cover to cover, and complete the required courses of dozens of colleges. Now, this statement is hardly an exaggeration. It is the generally accepted theoretical view of man's mental potentialities. Now, how can we tap this gigantic potential? Well, it's a big and very complex problem with many ramifications. But as Herbert Otto points out, it is clear that persons who live close to their capacity, who continue to activate their potential, have a pronounced sense of well-being and considerable energy. They see themselves as leading purposeful and creative lives. If everything you have is the result of using just 10% of your mind, consider for a moment what it will mean to you and your family if you can increase this percentage. None of us, as a rule, has the slightest notion of the real capabilities of his mind. But believe me when I say that your mind can be compared to an undiscovered gold mine, and it makes no difference whether you're 17 or 70. Look at it this way. Your goal is in the future. Your problem is to bridge the gap which exists between where you are now and the goal you intend to reach. This is the problem to solve. Robert Seashore, when chairman of the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University, pointed out that successful people are not people without problems. They're simply people who've learned to solve their problems. And there you have it. Living successfully, getting the things we want from life, is a matter of solving the problems which stand between where we now are and the point we wish to reach. No one is without problems. They're a part of living. But let me show you how much time we waste in worrying about the wrong problems. Here's a reliable estimate of the things people worry about. Things that never happen, 40%. Things over and past that can't be changed by all the worry in the world, 30%. Needless worries about our health, 12%. Petty miscellaneous worries, 10%. Real, legitimate worries, 8%. In short, 92% of the average person's worries take up valuable time, cause painful stress, even mental anguish, and are absolutely unnecessary. And of the real, legitimate worries, there are the problems we can solve, and there are the problems beyond our ability to personally solve. But most of our real problems usually fall into the first group, the ones we can solve if we learn how. Now, I'm going to assume you've decided upon a goal. Your problem is, how do I achieve it? Motion, greater income, a beautiful home, it makes little difference what your goal happens to be. But you have your goal, and you know that you will become and you will achieve what you think about. That is, if you stay with it, you will reach your goal. But how? Well, it's right here that your mind comes into play. What is your mind? No one knows for sure. Perhaps the best way to describe it is to quote Pulitzer Prize Archibald MacLeish. In his play, The Secret of Freedom, a character says, "The only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else you can find in a pig or a horse." That's uncomfortably true. The human mind is the one thing that separates us from the rest of the creatures on Earth. Anything that comes to us in the future will almost certainly come to us as a result of the extent to which we use our minds. And yet it's the last place on Earth the average person will turn to for help. In order to reflect just a moment on the human mind, consider what it's accomplished. Human knowledge has advanced more in the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization. Of all the scientists who ever lived, it's estimated that 90% of them are alive today. We've reached, in the area of ideas and human advancement, a plateau so high it was undreamed of by even the most optimistic forecasters as recently as 10 years ago. But every new idea triggers additional ideas, so that now we're in an era of compounding advancement on every front and in every area that staggers the imagination. Dr. Harlow Shapley of Harvard has said that we're entering an entirely new age of man. He calls it the psychozoic age, the age of the mind. And you own one, free and clear. Now let's look at a few facts. Now, the average working person has at his disposal an enormous amount of free time. In fact, if you total the hours in a year and subtract the sleep, 8 hours every night, you'll find he has almost 6,000 waking hours, of which he spends less than 2,000 on the job. Now, this leaves him 4,000 hours a year when he's neither working nor sleeping. These can be called discretionary hours, with which we can do pretty much as we please. At least, our minds are free. Now, so you can see the amazing results in your life, I want to recommend that you take just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and devote this hour to exercising your mind. Pick 1 hour a day on which you can fairly regularly count. And during this hour every day, take a completely blank sheet of paper. At the top of the page, write your present primary goal, clearly, simply. Then, since our future depends upon the way in which we handle our work, write down as many ideas as you can for improving that which you now do. Try to think of 20 possible ways in which the activity that fills your day can be improved. You won't always get 20, but even one idea is good. Now remember two important points with regard to this. Not particularly easy, and two, most of your ideas won't be any good. Now, when I say it's not easy, I mean it's like starting any new habit. At first, you'll find your mind a little reluctant to be hauled up and out of the old familiar rut. But as you think about your work and ways in which it might be improved, write down every idea that pops into your mind, no matter how absurd it might seem. Let me tell you what will happen. Some of your ideas will be good and worth testing. The most important thing this extra hour accomplishes, however, is that it deeply embeds your goal into your subconscious mind, starts the whole vital machinery working. 20 ideas a day, if you can come up with that many, total 100 a week, even if you don't think on weekends. An hour a day, 5 days a week, totals 260 hours a year, and still leaves you 3,740 hours of free leisure time. Now, this means you'll be thinking about your goal and ways of improving your performance, increasing your service, 6.5 full extra working weeks a year. 6.5 40-hour weeks devoted to thinking and planning. Can you see how easy it is to rise above the so-called competition? And we'll still leave you with 15 hours a day to spend as you please. Starting each day thinking, you'll find that your mind will continue to work all day long. You'll find that at odd moments, when you least expect it, really great ideas will begin to pop into your mind. And when they do, write them down as soon as you can. Just one great idea can completely revolutionize your work and, as a result, your life. If you want to develop the muscles of your body, you take daily exercise of some sort. Well, the mind is developed in the same way, except that there's a conceivable proportion to the time and energy spent. I've used this system for years, and it's given me some of the most gratifying and rewarding experiences of my life. And it costs only 5 hours a week. 5 hours out of 168. Is it worth it? It's like spending 5 hours a week digging in a solid vein of pure gold, because your mind is all of that, and much more. Each time you write your goal at the top of the sheet of paper, don't worry or become concerned about it. Think of it as only waiting to be reached, a problem only waiting to be solved. Face it with faith and bend all the great powers of your mind towards solving it. And believe me, solve it you will. Now let's briefly recap. This week, start spending 1 hour each day getting as many ideas as you can. Try for 20 a day on ways to improve what you're now doing. Remember, the achievement of your goal very likely depends upon it, as does your whole future. Two, if everything you now have is the result of using, say, 5 to 10% of your mental abilities, you can imagine what life will be like if you can increase this figure to 20% or more. Three, successful people are not people without problems. They're simply people who've learned to solve their problems. Four, don't waste time and energy worrying about needless things. 40% of them will never happen, 30% have already happened and can't be changed, 12% are needless worries about our health, 10% are petty miscellaneous worries, and only 8% are real. Try to separate the real from the unnecessary and solve those which are within your ability to solve. Last of all, the only thing in the world that can take you to your goals in life is your mind, its effective use, and following through when it surprises you. Each of us has a tendency to underestimate his or her own abilities. We should realize that we have, deep within ourselves, a reservoir of great ability, even genius, that can be tapped if we'll just dig deep enough. It's the miracle of your mind.
Okay. All right. Well, we are back. Okay. This is BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. And that was Mr. Earl Nightingale. And that clip was on YouTube and it's called How Successful People Think, again, by Earl Nightingale. We will post that in BIB Radio's Facebook page. So if you're not a member of our Facebook page, just type in all capital letters BIB Radio and you can see any clips or information on our guests or clips that we have played, information about the trade show, anything we talked about today that we have available, we will put in that Facebook page. Okay, and I also want to remind you that you are listening to BIB Radio. We are on Black Talk Radio Network every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Want you to remember to support Black Talk Media Project also. Very important for you to do so. If you would like to call in and join us, if you're listening by computer or at any other time you would like to call in and join us during our programming, you can, of course, join us by uberconferencecall.com/Black Talk Radio Network. Call in by dialing 1-866-510-9025. No PIN needed, or the alternate number is 704-802-5056. Okay, perfect. All right, well, we have a couple minutes to discuss that wonderful video by Earl Nightingale called How Successful People Think. Now, I played that because, again, it is something that I partake in on a daily basis, listening to inspirational speakers, because I believe that that is important in keeping your mind motivated in new and interesting ideas for business and entrepreneurship. If you take the time to meditate on important ideas, and just kind of clear your mind out of everything else, you'd be surprised what pops up. Me, myself, I've developed about 2 different enterprising ideas from listening to motivational speeches just within the last 2 weeks. So I'm very excited about that. But Robert, let's go ahead and talk about that speech there for a few minutes. What did you gather from that?
Wow. I mean, first, I just want to say, if you never listened to Earl Nightingale, those who are listening to this show, I strongly advise you to tune into, go to YouTube and just as a daily message or inspiration to do that. I mean, really, you just really don't know what you're missing out on. The things that he said and he says are so very simple to understand. I mean, it's so simplistic that a lot of times we are looking for the complex instead of the simplicity, and it's hard to reach the people because they expect it to be complicated, but yet it's so simplistic. And when you listen to what we just got through listening to Mr. Nightingale, it's like opening your mind up to something that was pretty much already in your head. And especially for those who are on the path of trying to be successful, it's in your head, but you don't have the dialogue every day to affirm nor confirm your thoughts. And this is why I say you should listen to what you just heard again and more of that again. Everything I love, CeCe got me listening to Earl Nightingale. But that's what I have to hear every day. I have to hear that type of dialogue. If I'm not having that type of dialogue, it's going to be more so destructive dialogue with everyday people. And it may not be destructive in the manner of tear something up, but it's either or. It's no in between. It's either the dialogue is going to be building, or it may be subliminally tearing you down. You know, you got to listen to this guy. I mean, you heard it for yourself. You just heard what you heard. And it's just, for me, I just love Mr. Nightingale, the message that he sends. As you said one time, CeCe, you don't know if the man owns slaves or I don't know what he's done in the past. I don't know where he comes from. But what I do know is that I get from listening to Mr. Nightingale is very inspirational. A lot of stuff that, like the NAAA, all that, I used to challenge that when I was a part of that. I used to challenge it because I always would say, But this is a middle-class white man. He ain't never had the same problems that black folks have had that made them want to drink or drug. But this information that you're hearing right now from Mr. Nightingale is pretty much, I would say, very spiritual. But most people would say it's, no, that's just business. No, these are some biblical principles that develop the human being to a much higher level of existence. And that's what the Word of God does.
Well, I definitely agree. Well, what I would say is, you know, again, I listen to motivational speeches every day on YouTube, whether it be Les Brown or George Frazier or just somebody like that, Earl Nightingale, you know, just get it where you can, because this entrepreneurial path, you know, it could be a little oppressive sometimes when you're dealing with customers and the people who work for you and just everyday life. But if you start out with this motivational information, it's like a seed planted. And then when those challenges come up throughout the day, you're like, oh, wait, I already know how to take care of that one. And you just float on by the rest of your day with no problem. Seriously, because if you're prepared for these things that come, or even the negative thoughts in business, then you just know how to handle them because you've already equipped yourself. But what I saw or what I heard, I wrote these things down. He said, successful people are not people without problems, but people who have learned to solve them. Now, that's very important to know, because a lot of times we see people on the outside and we think, oh, wow, look how good they're doing. Oh, what about me? What about me? Well, everybody has problems at different levels, different issues or whatever. But those people that you see as successful, they have learned to navigate through the problems. They're quick thinkers sometimes, and they have just learned how to get through those problems. So we must do that. And again, listening to motivational speech does that. You know, it says also, we are only operating at part of our brain capacity. I believe he said 10%. So if we're only using, you know, I think I'm pretty smart. So if I'm using only 10% of my brain, what if I use 20%? What if I use 50%? My goodness, what if I used 100%? Oh my goodness, that would be amazing. So I think that we need to look at ways to increase our brain capacity. Of course, you know, we can educate ourselves in many different ways these days because of the internet. We could read great books on business, inspiration. We can watch YouTube videos. Again, I'll go back to what I talk about, your learning modality. Figure out how you learn so that you could increase that 10% to perhaps 12%, 15% or whatever. Just increase. How can you increase? You increase by adding to. So what is it that you can add to for your life to get to a different level? I mean, it's so simple these days. Our guest last week talked to us about you could enroll in college for free online. There's some universities that allow you to take classes for free. Just any little thing that you can do. Take a language. You know, languages are free. Go to what is that thing? Something.com, of course. Mango.com. I believe they teach languages for free. YouTube teaches languages for free. Lynda, L-Y-N-D-A, Lynda.com. Lynda is a library system all over the country. I love Lynda.com. Lynda.com teaches you many things, including language. So how is it that you could increase that brain capacity of yours? Stop operating on 10%. I mean, some people are operating on 5%, I believe, but stop operating on that 10% and just, you know, get ahead of the game. Okay.
You know, on that language level, when he said that, you know, your brain, you have the capability of learning over 40 different languages.
Mm-hmm.
That just blew me away.
Well, it's true, but we're all convoluted by all this cluttery crapola that we deal with every day. So there's no way that the good can enter in if you have all that bad stuff there. So you've got to look for ways to throw out the junk so that new can enter in. I mean, that's just reality. We only have a few minutes, but let me keep going. I'm sorry. I'll go on and on. Let me see. And he said 92% of worries are unnecessary. Like 30%, you can't change 30%. So like, why worry about it? 12%, you worry about your health. 10%, like miscellaneous, and only 8% of the things that you worry about are like relevant. 8%. So 92% of worries are unnecessary. So again, you have got to declutter your brain. Again, you know, go on the internet, get some inspirational information. You can do something right where you're at. You know, a lot of people equate money to being able to free yourself. Well, I mean, we know that there are other things that you can do until you get to the money. Let's see, what else did he say? And that's what we talk about every week on this show. We talk about all kinds of things. So where is the other one? Oh, he talked about the discretionary hours in our day. So the discretionary hours in the day describe that time that you have to yourself. You know, that time that you flop down and you watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta or Love and Hip Hop and all that stuff that is not adding to you. What did our last guest talk? What did she say about the TV? She said you should not be watching the TV unless you earn $10,000 a month.
Right.
So nobody should be watching TV right now, pretty much. Well, I mean, there are people earning $10,000 a month, but I'm saying, you know, if you're on that pathway, you know, if that's the gauge that we're using, there's a lot of people that should not be watching television. But those discretionary hours are important. It is time to do things differently. The only way you can get something different is by doing things differently. Okay. So, I mean, my goodness, that Earl Nightingale, I tell you, he's wonderful. So I look forward to you all messaging us and letting us know what it is that you listen to or do for motivation. Let me see, 92%. Okay, yeah, I did talk about everything I need to talk about. So let us know what you do or listen to for motivation. You can email us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. If you'd like to reach out to us for any sort of business advice, if you would like to go out of town with us, we are offering coaching sessions for Las Vegas and Chicago. So if that is something that you're interested in, please, again, email us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. We will connect with you and offer you a package to get started. Let's see here. So we have got 5 minutes left until we invite our guest on. She's been waiting ever so patiently. Her name is Miss Leah Gavin, and she's going to talk to us about her book. She's got a book out and some estate planning and those type of things. She's a coach. We read her bio in the beginning. You guys heard. And that's another thing you need to do sometimes. Well, no, all the time when you are in business, you need to have an advisor. You need to have somebody ahead of you that you can trust that has gone beyond where you've been. Like, they've been where you've been. How important is that to you, Robert?
It's very important, very vital. You know, some other people, I always say, don't give me your success stories. Give me the hard part of what it took to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So share that with me, because the success is obvious for the most part. You know, people come down to flea market, they can relate to me being in the van last year this time, and then they look at how fast this thing has grown, but they never get the chance to see the headaches. The moment you just want to go and stick your head up under the bed or in the corner and just cry your heart out to God, they don't see that part. And that's the part that you get the most out of when you or you should when you talk to an entrepreneur or someone that's doing something great. You know, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, you know what? And it's, you know, I mentioned you in that thing because, well, in that last part about having an advisor, because you do have an advisor, and you were about to make a decision, but your advisor asked you, you know, does this add up? Have you done the math on that? You know, and had you not had that that consultation with your advisor, you may have made a snap decision where you should have thought about it a little bit more. How important is that to you in the last 2 minutes?
So very important, and on all levels, because see, when you have a great or an advisor or someone who believes in you, then they expect more out of you, and when you don't all the time rise to their expectations, a wise person won't smack you or beat you down with their words. A wise person, or just ask you a simple question like he did me. I sent him pictures of this big pretty house, woo 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 woo, and his questions, he didn't say anything about the house. His question was, well, you didn't send me any numbers. That was on a text. Is you didn't send me any numbers. The house looked good, but you didn't send me any numbers.
Right.
And then a text later, did you do your math? And then I text back, LOL, you're right. Numbers don't lie. And there
right.
are many situations out there that people are in need or ready to come up out of their house, mansions and all, you know, that could be, if done right, in my favor. None of this stuff is by chance or luck. If you move out on chance and luck, that's not a blessing. That's not a blessing. That's a mistake that the other person made that you may think you're benefiting from, or it may give you some temporary easement in life. But it's not a blessing. You know, the blessing is when you can mathematically put a formula together that you win out of.
Perfect.
When you can mathematically control the outcome, that's your blessing.
Okay, well, we got to go to a commercial break right now. And on those last words, thank you so much. You're listening to BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back in just a second.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right, everybody. Thank you for coming back with us in the last hour of BIB Radio. You're listening to us again on Black Talk Radio Network. We would advise you to participate in contributing to the Black Talk Media Project. We are here every day except for, I'm sorry, I was about to tell them we're here every day except for Monday and Tuesday. Oh my goodness. I'm sorry. That is the store hours. But no, we are here every Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Please join us and listen to our podcast by going to Black Talk Radio Network and look up BIB Radio and listen to our archived programs. You will be pleasantly surprised. Feel free to share with all of your friends any subject matter that you would like to. If you'd like to contact us, of course, our email address is weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. You could address it to CC and Robert or both. It does not matter because it will get to either one of us. Let's see here. Now, if you are listening and in queue, like I see there are a few people in queue, you can press ** to raise your hand if you have any questions. But what we are going to do right now at this hour is invite our guest on. Her name is Miss Leah Gavin. She's written a book called 10 Smart Money Moves, How to Master Your Money and Make a Difference. She's got social media that you can follow her on. And again, we will post that in the BIB Radio Facebook page. She is an author, speaker, personal financial coach, financial stewardship champion. You can reach her at info@leahgavin.com. Now, listeners, remember, you can talk to Leah by pressing ** and we will see you in queue. But right now, without further ado, let's get our guest on. Welcome to BIB Radio. Welcome to BIB Radio.
Hey, Cece, this is Leah Gavin. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Robert Levitt.
We have a bad echo.
Yeah, there is an echo. I'm not sure.
If the sister's on a speakerphone, that may be the problem.
Okay. Let's see here. Are we good now? Leah, are you able to hear us? Uh-oh. I think maybe she might have hung up. Oh, no, wait. Okay. Robert, are you hearing me?
I hear you well.
Okay, so let's see here. Leah is not there. So, Leah, please call back in so we can get you back on the program. Oh, the modern technology, I tell you, it's a blessing and a curse. Let's see. So, yes, she sounded like she was on. Okay. So, I'm not sure. Let me message her right now. Okay. You know what? She told me what she'd be calling in from, so I'm not sure. Let's see here. Let's see. I think that's her. Hold on just a second, everyone. Is this you, Leah?
This is Leah.
Okay, perfect. Oh, welcome again to BIB Radio. Oh, not sure what happened there, but it does not matter. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I'm out in Arizona. It's got to be a good 88, 90 degrees outside. It's gorgeous. So I'm blessed.
I wish I was there with you because we are not having that type of weather here in St. Louis. But, oh, congratulations. So let's get started. Now, I see that you are a coach. From your standpoint, how is it important for any entrepreneur to have a coach?
Well, I like what Brother Robert just said a few minutes ago about how a coach can ask you a question that you didn't previously think about. So the benefit of having a coach and a guide is somebody who's already seen all the pitfalls and the common mistakes, and a coach can help you avoid those things just by asking you some key questions. So a coach will help you get to where you want to go faster and make it less painful. It's still going to be work, even with a coach. But without a coach, it's going to be harder, it's going to cost you more, and it's going to take you longer. So no matter what level you're playing at, everybody needs a coach. NBA players, NFL players, MLB players. We're doing spring training out here in Arizona. They all have coaches that they go to because a coach can see something that you can't see because you're right in the middle of it. They've got better perspective. So coaching is critical.
Wow. Okay. Now I can see where that would be important because you just named off the NBA players. And of course we look at those people like, wow, they're millionaires. Now, if those people who are in position to make, or they do make, great money, why would we think that we're anything different? If we are lined up to do great things and make great amounts of money, of course we would need a coach and a guide to get us to those places. I mean, that's so vital. How would one go about picking out a coach? That's important.
Well, usually what happens is there are multiple areas that you have responsibilities for. There are multiple areas in your life. So you may have a coach or a trainer that helps you physically, so a fitness trainer. You may also at the same time have a spiritual coach, a place where you go to get that kind of spiritual guidance, to get fed, to make sure that you're grounded and doing what it is that's important to you. And then you also have a business coach that says, look, here's what my idea is, here's what my concept is, here's what my business is like now, but I want to take it to another level. So what do I need to be doing differently? And all three of those people will speak to you in different ways. You'll connect with them in different ways. I heard Brother Robert say a little bit ago earlier in the call, he said, I don't want to just hear your success stories. Basically, he said, show me your scars. Show me the places where you fell, you got hurt, you didn't feel like going on. Show me those things so that I know that it's normal, that when I fall, when I struggle, I'm not the only person to fall and struggle. But just let me know that I can get through that, because all I have to do is keep stepping forward. So a coach will connect with you in a way that you can see their scars, but also that you can see yourself and the possibilities that they create for you. A coach should help you see something that you can't see for yourself because you're right in the middle of the struggle.
I got a question. You just touched on something that's so very powerful, because a lot of times the people right around you could be coaches, but a lot of times we're going through something right now, and I recognize this from a distance. I've heard stories about people in Chicago, how they see Minister Farrakhan, and it's like they take him for granted because he's right there. Well, I've heard the same thing. I actually think that I feel the same way sometimes, where my scars are so visible. Our scars, those of us who are doing things, if you make yourself transparent. I was homeless last year. I had a wrestle with allowing that to be shared on Facebook or not. But it was that God in me that said, share it on Facebook. And I shared it on Facebook. And that was so liberating for me, the person that I am. It was so liberating that it wasn't 3 months later that I made my first, I made a deal to buy two buildings with 8 units in it from the backseat of my car. That I also shared that as well. And see, so I guess what I'm saying is a lot of us are teachers, a lot of us are coaches in our own way once we have the experience, but it's so, when you're so visible, when people can actually access your wounds daily, then it's you're not taken as serious, in my opinion, or maybe even for granted. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I think part of it is the fact that if you are so close, sometimes it's hard to appreciate what you have in front of you. And I think that we all see that in different areas of our lives. But when we talk about the people that you're sent to coach or mentor or train or speak into their lives, they're going to see you and they're going to relate to you because of your story, and they're just going to connect. You're not going to have to work hard to get them to see it, because when you tell your story about, you know, being that vulnerable and being homeless for that period of time and how you struggle with dealing with it, then somebody else who's been through that, it's not going to be about, you know, this is Brother Robert, I see him all the time. It's going to be like, he hurt where I hurt. He feels what I feel. He understands what I'm going through. He's talking to me. Let's move forward, right? And that's really what coaching is. That's when it gets magnified, when a coach can open a door to say, here's what my struggle has been. Here's what my pain has been, but you can get through it. then that vulnerability lets you get to the people that you're supposed to speak to. When we realize that all of our struggles are not just about us personally, that many of them are about the people that we're supposed to reach and speak into, then we'll stop being so protective of our personal pride, maybe is the best way to describe it. We can let that go and say, you know what? I went through this not just for me, but for the ones that are coming up behind me. You need to know.
That's true, because you know what? I'm glad you said that. It's fun. I had connected with an old friend. Let's see. I haven't actually spoken to her since 2011. And at that time, she was telling me that, you know, she was going through a crazy situation. Well, I talked to her just last week. Same thing. She was still going through some things. I mean, much more detrimental than the last time that I talked to her. And because of where I'm at, where I am now, I was able to tell her, you know what? That story was meant to be for someone else to hear. You definitely need to be a speaker. So I immediately started telling her what she needed to do. And we get so crazy with that because we see the potential in this story, but sometimes other people don't see it because they're still going through it. But I know for a fact that that situation that she's gone through is definitely for her to become a speaker, a mentor, a teacher. But she first has to see herself outside of that situation. So I think a lot of times we are all to be coaches. We are all to be mentors, but we can't pull ourselves outside of that struggle to be that coach or mentor to even perhaps make money from it.
Yeah, it's, again, it goes back to getting to, first you've got to get through it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get through it, you've got to be able to grow through it, and you've got to see what the lessons were inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can use that as a teaching moment for somebody else. Then you can use that as an inspirational moment for somebody else to be able to tell your story, and then they can see themselves in your story.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a process that you have to go through, and a coach has to be on the other side of that to be able to pull somebody else through.
Right.
You know, when I played sports when I was in high school. I played basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a young, immature high school student, I used to look at my basketball coach and think, my coach, he's old. He's an old guy. You know, when you're 15, 16, everybody's old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how is this little old guy going to tell us how to play this game? But he could tell us because of experience. He had played the game. He
mm-hmm.
had watched the game. He had seen mm-hmm. the beginning and the end over and over again. That's how he could coach me. Even though he couldn't outrun me, he couldn't outshoot me, he couldn't outdribble me, because he had already done that. And that's what your coach does for you.
Wow, that's so important, because, and we have to get beyond that visual, you know, because a lot of mm-hmm. times the coaches are now overweight and just don't look like don't look like they could do anything for us, but they've still been through the struggle. So we need to go ahead and make that happen. That is, woo, that is, that's so profound, though, because, you know, we deal with people, entrepreneurs on many levels. We really do. But there's a lot of people out here that just don't know that they must connect in the appropriate ways to get to the next level. And then even a lot of people don't know that there is a next level. They're just living day by day to get a quick dollar. They don't really have a goal to progress into something else. What do you think that us as coaches, or we as coaches, need to do to bring that out of people without sounding like a know-it-all? Because I mean, my sister has called me Little Miss Know-It-All since I was 7, you know. But I'll see a person, I'll be like, you need to do this, you know, and I'll have this long list and I'll be so excited with all this information. But the person is like, well, I'm really happy here. I mean, they won't really say that, but their actions will say that. So what is it that we need to do to try to draw that out of people? Or is it just that willingness that they have to have? I mean, can we draw it out of them?
I think it's a combination of the two, because first of all, they have to be coachable.
Mm-hmm.
They have to want to hear. You know, you could have all the greatest information in the world. You can have the greatest system to be able to implement to help them. You can see if they do X, Y, Z, they will be in a better situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are not in a place where they're ready to hear that, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You will waste your time. You will talk yourself till you're tired.
Yes.
If
yes.
they're not ready to listen and implement, it's useless.
And
mm-hmm.
you have to be able, I got it, this is good. I think also, too, well, no, it's not. I think I know that as a coach, you got to know, in short, what to throw out there and what to expect to hear from that person that you're putting it out there as little as possible to see if they bite at that. Because you'll spend too much time talking, and that person, you are all in with this person, and you get nothing out of, in return from it.
Right.
So you
I
have
think
to
one
be
of the,
able to know how to fish them, fish for the person that really, your audience, I guess.
Yeah, I think one of the best questions a coach ever asked me, and I saw them do it in sessions with other people in my mastermind group and that sort of thing, the coach would hear something and it would trigger in her head, like, okay, this is where I can create change for you, right? She would
right.
hear it, and then she would look at me and she would say, can I? She would ask permission. Can I help you with that?
Mm-hmm.
And she would wait for me to answer.
Mm.
And it wasn't like just a hypothetical question. It was, I'm going to ask you, because if you don't want me to help you, then I will withhold it. It's okay. But I'm going to ask for permission.
That is good. That is good. Ask for permission.
Yeah. Because if they say no, that means whatever is blocking them, they're not going to hear it. And it doesn't matter how great your information is. So just say, you know what? No worries. When you're ready for it, if you want it, what's that?
What if they are very hesitant in answering the question? Well, let me think about it. I don't know. How much is it going to cost? What if they come at it like that?
A good coach knows that the decision has to be theirs to make, right? So what you have to do is to get them to the point where they can take their own objections out of the way. So if it's about money, just ask the question, is it money? Or is it just that you don't that you're okay with where you're at, or you already got the answer to the question and you don't need my help? And let them answer, because there is something that's holding them back, but until you find out what that is, you really can't help them.
Right.
Hmm. Wow. Well, you know what? This
but
is
it's asking their permission.
Right. This is coaching for the coaches, I should say, because we all get caught up in like dealing with humans and human psychology, because you have to have a script for every single person in every single situation that we come across, because it could be a money issue. It could be they don't want to hear from you issue. It could be baby's daddy issue. I mean, I could throw all these issues out there, but it could just be so many issues, and you just want to help the person. But if they don't want your help, then you can't help them. Like you said, you ask them, can you help? You know, I mean, it really, you do have to kind of be a little psychologist or psychiatrist to figure these things out. And, you know, I know that we all need coaching. We all need coaching. We all need to dialogue about these things, because as entrepreneurs, we come across all people of all walks of life. I mean, my goodness. So let's backtrack a little bit, Leah. Now, we want you to free flow and just kind of tell us about yourself and what it is that you offer, because we know that you have products and services. You have a YouTube channel, and we want to make sure that everybody knows who you are.
All right. Well, thank you. Again, my name is Leah Gavin, and my backstory is, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, my folks got divorced when I was a kid, but before their divorce, we had, you know, it was like the best place to be a kid. We did all the vacations, we did all the after-school activities, we had all the toys, you know, it was like a new car every other year because we had resources. We weren't rich, but, you know, we weren't hurting for anything that I could tell as a kid. Mm-hmm. But when my folks got divorced, I could see, even at the age of 10, what that shift happened and what it looked like in our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, it was like little kids didn't get in grown folks' conversations. That was what we were taught. It was like, your child, you do not get into grown folks' conversations. So we weren't having dialogue about household finances, but I could just see. Mm-hmm. I could see things had changed, right?
Right.
So what that led me to do was, as I started in high school and college, I wanted to learn how to understand money. So I went on my own little path of trying to figure out, how does this whole money thing work? What did my mom not know that she should have known? What could she have done differently so that she didn't have to take this whole step back in lifestyle when mm-hmm. my father left, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was my own personal mission because I just wanted to figure it out. And as a single woman, it was like there was no backup plan. I was the one. It was on me to make it happen in my household, or it just wasn't going to happen.
Mm.
So because of that, it just put me on this mission about money. And I went into financial services, started working in that industry. And the crazy thing was I was talking to people about their money, and then I was like struggling with my own money, but I knew the system. I just didn't have any, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm working for Fortune 500 companies, helping people put together investment plans as I was making my own struggle and mistakes. So when Brother Robert was talking about Show Me Your Scars, when I wrote the book about money, the very first chapter, I just put all the dirt out there at the beginning. It's like, here's where I struggled. Here's where I had payday loans. Here's where I had bad credit. Here's where I had student loans. I know all that stuff. I know about the disconnect notices because I lived through it. But I know that when you make some certain decisions about how you handle money, it changes things. And so the book is all about, what are the things that people who manage money well, what do they have in common? What are some common behaviors that they exhibit? And then what are mm-hmm. some common things that people who struggle with money, what do they consistently do? And the mm-hmm. book is written for people who would not necessarily walk into a bookstore and go to the financial section. You know, it's for people who don't talk about money. They're not looking for hot stock tips. They just want to understand how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written to be a conversation between one believer to another about money and how to make it work for you
mm-hmm.
and get rid of that money shame. So that's what the book is about. That's kind of my backstory. I love talking about it because I understand that there is this whole thing surrounding money that's not all just about dollars and cents and bank accounts and balances. A lot of it is about emotion. A lot of it's about guilt. A lot of it's about shame. And until we can have those conversations, we can't get free.
Mm. Wow.
You know, we had a show a little while back, and because it's something that stays on my mind about entrepreneurs, and as you were saying about your book, a title came to mind, and hopefully we can get together and collab on this one, The Domestic Side of Entrepreneurship. Because, as you said, it's those emotional things. See, when your eggs got to be lined up all in a row for this thing to be successful. You know, and big business have systems in play that usually operate themselves. You just have to have the key people. Small businesses don't have the systems in play, unfortunately, and we should, but we don't most of the time. So when a small business, quote-unquote small business, doesn't have a system in play and you're self-employed, you're so vulnerable to those things you just got through, especially the emotional side of it, because now your domestic side that rarely gets discussed about entrepreneurship is very vital to your survival in entrepreneurship. You, those are things that I mean, there's no script wrote for that. At least I haven't ran across anything like that. What do you think about that?
I think you're right. Nobody's talking about it. And that's part of the emotional side of money that I like to talk about with people, because how you feel about money dictates how you manage it. I've seen people inherit hundreds of thousands of dollars from family members that passed on and left them money, and they were afraid to spend it. They felt like, it's not my money, I can't spend it, mom and dad work for it, and I'll just leave it there. And I'm like, that's not what they wanted, otherwise they wouldn't have left it to you. But that emotional part can control what you do. Some people feel like they don't deserve to have money. So every time they get money in their hands, they give it away, waste it away, spend it away, shop it away, because they got to get it out because they're afraid to have it.
Right.
Somebody asked about money, and she said, well, she was wearing a T-shirt that said, don't ask me, I ain't got none. And they were like, what is this about? And she goes, well, I just figured if I wore the shirt, then my family and friends wouldn't beg me for money. So there you go. It just says it.
That's crazy.
That's some messed up thinking, right?
Yes.
Hey.
Oh, God.
That's some messed up thinking. But that's the stuff that controls what we do, whether we say it or not. I mean, she was brave enough to wear a shirt. Some of us feel that way. We just don't say it out loud.
Well, as a man thinketh, so is he. You know that?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the, you know, and what has been planted down on the inside of us a lot of times has to be uprooted, especially when it comes to our people, because, you know, you mentioned, you know, you wanted to do something different than what your mom did. There must have been something that you had to do different so you wouldn't struggle like your mother. You know, those are things that we have to early on recognize, and something that we need to be teaching children, because there are parents, including myself, that have done things the wrong way, and children need to unlearn that stuff very fast so that they could be successful.
You're absolutely right. And let me just say, you know, I wanted to know, you know, how my mom got blindsided and how to avoid that for myself. But let me just say, I mean, she worked hard. She did everything she could to keep us on track. She just didn't have a backup plan. That was the piece that caught her off guard. So when life changed, she had no safety net. And so
right.
I remember as a kid coming home, and it's like the lights would be off and I'd have to go to the neighbor's house to call, or the phone would be off, I'd have to go to the neighbor's house to call and say, Mom, you know, can you stop at the phone company on the way home, because here's the situation. So she struggled and did what she could, but it took her, I would say, a good 4 or 5 years to rebound, right? And so for me, what that said to me was like, how do you build something so that you don't get caught off guard? And we can plan for so much, and then life still happens, and life still surprises us. But I just wanted to know, what could I do to build a stronger foundation? That was the goal.
Right. Now, what we want to do is, of course, hear the rest of this and how you built this foundation. But right now, let's take a break, and then we'll come back. You're listening to BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
All righty, everybody. Welcome back to BIB Radio. We are talking to our guest, Ms. Leah Gavin. She's an author, speaker, personal financial coach, and financial stewardship champion. She's letting us know how she built her way up from financial ruin to now. Okay, so Leah, you were talking about your mother and how she did the best that she could, which a lot of our parents, they did what they knew how to do. But you
right.
wanted to move beyond that. So take us from there.
Yeah, she did what she knew how. And that's what we do for our kids today. And some things we get right and some things we get wrong. But I think one of the big things about talking about money, the reason why I do it is because we've got to get past that. If I don't say anything about it, then it's just me and I'm the only one. It's that secret shame that messes us up with money right now. Because I've sat in my office and I've seen people come through, you know, whether I was working for, you know, whatever company I was working for, one or the other, I just didn't see enough of us. Meaning I didn't see enough African Americans coming to the table and say, here's where I am. I know I want to be in a different situation, but just kind of tell me, what do I need to do next? We didn't come to the table asking those questions because we felt like it was too private. It was too embarrassing because we weren't where we thought we should be or we weren't where we thought our neighbors were. But the reality is a lot of people of other ethnic groups come to the table and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm doing the best I can. Help me. Where should I go? What should I do next? And they would come just okay with not knowing what they didn't know and ask for help. But it seems like we don't come to the table because we feel like we should already know something, and if we don't know it, then we'll just stay on the sidelines and be quiet about it. But there's help that's out there available, and if you go to the table, sit down with the professional, they can walk you through it. And the reason I wrote the book and the reason I talk about it now and I go places and I see people, I want them to see that there's somebody that looks like you that can relate to what you're going through and can tell you how to make a difference, can tell you, okay, here's the way to navigate it. Because if you don't see it in somebody, whether it's somebody physically in front of you or somebody that you see their information online or like you're playing the audio clips from Les Brown and George Frazier and Earl Nightingale, if you don't hear it and see it, then you don't understand that it's possible for you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to see it to even reach for it.
You absolutely do. And like I said, you know, it's more accessible these days by way of the internet, but we have to cut back on that discretionary time that we waste. You know, like Earl Nightingale was talking about the discretionary time. The time that's basically yours, what are you filling that time with? The time that is yours should be time that you're building your mind. If you're not building your mind and building your education about money, then you won't go further than your parents. What do you think about that?
That's absolutely true. I had a sales coach years ago, and one of the things he said that stuck with me even to this day, he goes, listen, he goes, this business is something that you can continually have to work at. He goes, you got to think of it like a piece of fruit. When you're green, you're growing, and when you're ripe, you're rotting. So either you're continuing to learn and get better, or once you get to the point where you feel like I don't need to go to another training, I don't need to listen to another session, I don't need to hear anybody else, then that's when you start to rot and you fall behind. So you've got to continually be finding out new things about your business, about your industry, about the economy, because it's constantly changing.
Awesome.
Even if you set up a game plan a year ago, 2 years ago, things in the marketplace have changed. And if you don't review it and update it and tweak it and revise it, you're standing still and everybody else is moving forward.
You know,
wow.
I always said this about guys that hustle, women that hustled in the street, that hustle drugs or whatever, marijuana. You know, and early on in my life, I was in that life. And the one thing that stands out to me about that life today as a business person, the mathematics that we taught ourselves from doing those type of things is the most, I mean, when I say it's beyond extraordinary because it's so simple how we took a drug, a product, and we knew to break it down to make more. We accommodated the customer's economic situation. So you took it and broke it down to make more. Now, I had a conversation with a guy yesterday about my laundry detergent. And himself also came out of that lifestyle as well. And soon as I said it to him, I said, man, look, I got to bottle this 5 gallons up into a 1 gallon situation. We get 5 gallons out of five single gallons out of a 5 gallon bucket, but we charge this amount of money for that. And he immediately saw the profit in that. And we both laughed, and I said, man, I'm so grateful to the knowledge that I learned hustling in the streets. Now, I say that because a lot of business people go into the business without a hustler's mentality. They don't know how to work the industry, per se. And I've seen this because I always go into a marketplace and I look for ways to not just be a customer, but to turn the manufacturer into a customer. And that's something that I say, you know, a lot of the business people that we deal with, they didn't have that experience. And I see that, I say, wow, that's a no-brainer for me. But a lot of guys that come out of the street that really hustle, I see them as great potential business leaders because they have that ability to go and make the most of a situation where a lot of businesses that start up a business and they say, well, we need to get a loan. I don't see a business needing to get a loan if that business cannot maintain itself. It's not worthy of getting a loan, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm saying that because it hit me with what you was just saying. And I'm like forever so grateful, not because of the situation that we were in, but the profound lessons that come out of sometimes what seems to be such a bad thing. If you're really looking to do some good, it can be such a great thing. And I always say, I got in trouble one time in the community that I was in. I was went to be the block captain, went to one of the meetings where there were more Caucasians in the black neighborhood that was in the neighborhood group meeting. And I stood up as I heard these people say, these people, these people, these people, these people. And the street that they were talking about was nothing but black people. And I said, well, these people that you're referring to, I don't see them as just drug dealers. I see them as young entrepreneurs that got a bad product. And that got me in a lot of trouble by saying that. But I just, you know, when you said what you said, it sent my mind there, you know. I'm so grateful to having you on the show, and everything that you're saying it resonates with me because I love this thing, entrepreneurship. I love it. And when we have guests on our show that speak like you speak, I mean, that's down to earth, you know, that's relating to our show the way that you said you relate to some of the things you heard said prior to you coming on the show, that's what this show is all about to me. I like for our listening audience to be able to get the most simplistic but yet profound information. When it's so simple, people don't see the profoundness in it. But when it's simple, like how you're delivering it, it's profound at the same time. And that's what I'm so grateful for, that, you know, we were blessed to be able to put this format, and Scotty had the format for it, so you could come on and say what you're saying. And I thank you for it.
So my pleasure. I appreciate the time. And I want to make sure we talk about the documents and the estate planning, because that's another piece that our community is slow to take action on.
Thank you, because I almost forgot about that. That is why I brought you on here in the first place. Yes, please. Let's get into that, because that is important. Yes, go ahead.
Ooh. Absolutely. Yeah, because when I talked about, I call them legacy love letters, and that is a way that you as an individual can leave something behind and say, you know what? I'm not going to be here always, but I want you to know that I was thinking about you. I want you to know that I loved you enough to take a moment and pause from all of the craziness, all of the hectic stuff in life, all of the busy stuff that I have to do. I took a pause and I stop to write you this legacy love letter to you, my daughter, to you, my husband, to you, my wife, to you, my mom, whoever it is, and just say, this is what I want to have happen. If something happens to me and I can't speak for myself, I want this love letter that I'm writing to you to speak on my behalf. And I'm going to give you three myths about what I call legacy love letters. Other people call them estate planning documents. I'm going to give you three myths about them. Some people say, one, it's just for wealthy people, that I don't have enough money to have to worry about it. I'm not that big. I ain't got to worry about it. That's wrong. Legacy love letters are not just about money. It's about you. The second thing, the second myth about it is, I'm too young to have to worry about estate planning. Wrong. Here's the situation. What happens if you're an adult and something happens to you, even though your parent is right there at the hospital ready to be able to act on your behalf, if you're of legal age, then your parent is no longer your guardian. So they can no longer just walk in and say, that's my baby. This is what I want you to do, doctor, or this is what I don't want you to do. They don't have that authority any longer. So what they would have to do is go and petition the courts and say, this is my baby girl. She's 25 years old. I'm right here. I'm her mother. And the court's going to say, well, we need to get you appointed as her legal guardian. That takes time. That takes money. That takes stress and effort. So it's no such thing as being too young to have to deal with estate planning, not if you're an adult. The third myth about it is a trust is required to avoid probate and taxes. That's not true. A trust is a document that is designed to give anybody who's stepping in behind you a clear indication of what your wishes are so that there's no guessing, that there's no fighting, there's no struggle, there's no, well, that's not what Daddy said. No, here's what Daddy wrote. This is the document that Mommy and Daddy put in place so we know exactly what they want to have happen. So the reason I got on this tangent about documents is because, like I said, my folks divorced when I was young, but my dad didn't pass away until I was in my mid to late 20s. And he had remarried. And he had done well, worked for Caterpillar. Everybody knows Caterpillar back in the Midwest, right? He worked for Caterpillar, retired from there, and in his retirement years bought and sold investment property. So he wasn't wealthy, but he was, you know, taking care of his business. When he passed away and we went back to go to the services and that sort of thing, we were on friendly terms with his second wife. She basically took us to the basement downstairs where, you know, back in the Midwest, it's the laundry rooms and the garage, not the garage, the basement and the playroom and storage and all that stuff. And she said, well, I'm sure your dad would want you to have this stuff. And she proceeded to give us his old coats and clothes and hats and stuff. And we were like, okay.
Where's the money?
I think. Right. It was like, thanks, I think. And, you know, we weren't thinking about money so much. It was just like, okay, well, whatever we can get from our dad, we'd be happy to have it. But all I say is that was what she chose to give us. Now, was that his intention? I don't think so. But did he put anything in writing to say what his intention was? He didn't. So it left that whole gap of what did he really mean and how did that equate to what really happened? So what I'm telling people today is you can do a legacy love letter and let your family know exactly what your wishes are. Do not leave them in confusion. Do not leave them in hurt. Do not make them have to go and hold somebody legally accountable and have to take somebody to court. Don't even open up that can of worms. Just make it clear and outline it. Because I've seen families fight over money that was a little bit of money, and I've seen families fight over a lot of money, and I've seen families fight over dishes that nobody's going to eat on anyway, because it's not about the thing. It's about how it's all just an emotionally charged situation. Mm-hmm. And if there is no guidance, it can lead to chaos.
Right. I can definitely see that. And we've all seen that. You know, people fight over many things when someone passes away, and that's because a clear legacy love letter just had not been created. And right. We talked two weeks ago, one of our guests was a representative of the Legal Shield. And I was saying to him, it's unfortunate that when people think of, you know, writing legacy love letters or wills or anything like that, because it talks about death, you know, they just get fearful and they don't want to do anything. But the reality is everybody's going to die. But they think in talking about it, it's going to bring about death. I don't know where that comes from exactly. It sounds kind of spooky and hokey, but a lot of people are like that, you know, and it shows because nobody does it. Well, I shouldn't say nobody does it, but a lot of people have not done it. They haven't gone forth to put these plans in place in case something happens. So what advice or what service do you offer for people, Leah, to get this done?
Well, I think people need to realize that it's not just about death, because a lot of times what happens is, what happens if you are in a car accident and you're unconscious for a few days? Who speaks on your behalf? So a lot of times the challenge is, what if you survive? That might be worse than passing away, because you survive and you don't have the right person making medical decisions for you. Or you know, I've seen a lot of people who were incapacitated in the sense that they weren't, they had memory issues or life care issues, and they were here, but they couldn't speak for themselves. And now you've got a social worker who knows nothing about you, making decisions about where you're going to live, what family members have access to you, how much of your funds will be spent to care for you. It's like how is it that that's the appropriate person to be making those decisions for you? And even for those of us who have kids that are minors, it's like, if something happened to you, who would you want to care for your minor child? Who would you want to raise that child? Many times it's not the ex-spouse who's no longer in the picture, or the distant spouse who's no longer in the picture. Usually it's a close family member who is right there, you know, in the relationship. But if you don't put that in writing, then now a social worker is going to have to get involved in that process to say, let me decide where's the best place for your child to live. Really? You think the social worker knows that just by having a few interviews? So it's not just about death. It's about taking care of these decisions and putting your wishes in place so that the courts can look at it and say, well, look, she was pretty clear. This is what she said. She didn't want the ex to go and take over the assets and also raise the child. She wanted the child to go and live with her mother or her sister or whatever the scenario is. You just get the chance to be able to say, this is what is in the best interest for my family, and I love them enough to take a moment. It's so much deeper than I'm gone and I don't care what they do with my stuff.
Right.
Your stuff is like the least of it.
Right.
The most important part of it is you physically, so that you've got the right person making decisions for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part of it is that you've got the right person making decisions for those that you're leaving behind.
Absolutely.
You're telling those that you're leaving behind what it is that your wishes and intentions are, so that there's no family drama. I had a friend of mine who, her brother passed away in his mid-50s, and he had, his kids were adults, and he had multiple marriages, so he had kids by different wives over the years, and then those kids had kids and baby mamas and some marriages and some non-marriages, and so it was like this whole mix of, you know, 10, 12, 15 people. But you know what he did? He made his documents, he put it in place, and he said, you get this, this goes to you. He had it all lined out. He named everybody, and he named who he wanted to follow the instructions, and they called everybody together, and they said, this is what he wanted, and it was written in there. If you got a problem with it, then you can leave your share behind, and we'll split it with the rest of you. But we don't have to argue about it. We don't have to fuss about it. This is what he said. It goes so much easier that way.
Wow. Well, I think that, you know, we just need to be on the level of planning, period. Like you said, it's not just about death. It's about planning for things that happen, you know. And I know for myself, I remember I had planned for things to happen, and I had purchased like an insurance package, a health insurance package. And the guy came to my house and we were talking, and we're putting the package together because, of course, there's different tiers according to what you want to pay or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, well, you don't go to the emergency room, do you? And I'm young. I'm like, no. He's like, yeah, you're young. You don't go to the emergency room. And I was like, no, I don't go to the emergency room. No, no. So he had written that out of my policy. You know, this is very important. He had written that out of my policy. And it's about consulting with the right person concerning what you need. But since he had written that out of my policy, I didn't have it. Well, a couple months later, when I went to have to use the emergency room, I didn't have emergency room insurance. So yeah, that bill was quite hefty. So how important is that to consult with the right person concerning your legacy love letter?
Oh, absolutely, because you're only going to get advice as good as the quality of the experience of the person talking to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at a coach, when you look at a professional advisor, when you look at somebody who's guiding you through the process, the reason you pay them, and don't be afraid to pay them well, the reason you pay them is for their experience.
Mm-hmm.
You pay them for not just carrying the hammer, but you pay them for knowing where to strike with the hammer.
Right.
And that's based on the experiences and the mistakes that other people have made so that you don't have to make those same mistakes. Right?
Right.
The other thing I want to make sure I get in here in this conversation is that we are so aware of the differences of wealth accumulation between African Americans and other ethnic groups. We are so mm-hmm. aware that there's a wide gap between how much we've accumulated versus our counterparts. But part of that is because if we don't take the time to do the legacy love letters to pass on those assets to the next generation, then what leg up or step up they could have gotten is taken out from under them. Because if you've got a house and you don't put in documents in place to say, if something happens to me, this is who I want to get the house, then now granddad's house that has been paid off because he lived in it and worked all his life, now that asset that could have been $80,000, $100,000 or whatever can be taken away. And it's not passed on to the next generation. I've seen our counterparts. I had a classmate. She was like, oh, guess what my mom and dad gave me for my graduation present from college? What? Oh, they paid off all my student loans. They wrote a check. So me and my husband took that money and we went and put it down on our next house.
Hmm.
If we typically gave our kids that kind of step up where they got, whether it's, you know, here's the car and you don't have to make a car payment for the next 5 years, or here's the down payment on your house and now you're in a real house not paying rent in an apartment, or now you can inherit this house and now you can take what you would have been paying for a house payment, now you can be putting that money towards your own savings and investment, investing in your business, or whatever the case may be. If we don't give our kids those kinds of step-up opportunities, then we're making our kids start behind the curve every generation.
Mm.
And,
wow.
And it's not necessary. We can do some basic things, like I said, those that master money and do it well, there are some consistent things and behaviors that they do. So if we follow the behaviors, then we can get the outcomes. But if we're so busy being entertained by our televisions mm-hmm. and watching other people do whatever they do, whatever foolishness, whatever, you know, if we are
right.
so consumed with being entertained rather than being informed, then there's no way we're going to leave this coming generation in a better place. They're going to have to start over from scratch, and just with the amount of nonsense that's out in the public arena, I'm afraid if they have to start from scratch.
Mm.
Because they don't have the foundation that we had. I mean, think about it. There were some things as a kid growing up that was a given to you, that you were like, you know what, here's the line, and we go no further than this, because my mama gonna come down the street and snatch me. We don't cross certain lines.
Right.
But this generation right now, they don't have those same lines.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it's because people have become so consumed with trying to make a living that they don't have time for the children that they produced.
Scary.
Because
and I'm gonna give you...
they are trying to keep up with whoever the Joneses are, that non-existent family.
And that's it's true. It's true that we spend so much time trying to buy things that we can't afford to impress people that we don't really like, who aren't really thinking about us as much as we think they are. And mm-hmm. So, you know, my book is called 10 Smart Money Moves, How to Master Your Money and Make a Difference. Because the reality is, if you don't master your money, it will master you. It will mm-hmm. tell you what you can eat. It will tell you where you can live. It will tell you what you can drive. Mm-hmm. Or if you master it, then you tell it what to do rather than it telling you what to do. And so the legacy love letters, the money management, the coaching, for me, it's all connected. And it's mm-hmm. all just different pieces of the same conversation.
Right.
That we just need to have, and we need to be open about it and stop acting like we've got it all together when we don't. We know we don't, because the income gap between blacks and whites, income average $43,000 for us, $71,000 for them. Even with college degrees, it's $82,000 for us and $106,000 for them.
Oh, wait a minute. Add that college loan on top of that, and you're even further behind.
Hello.
But what we need to do is we need to let people know, let our listeners know, because this is being podcasted, how they can contact you for further conversation, because 2 hours, 1 hour is never long enough for this information. But they need to be able to connect with you after the show. So how can they get your book, and how can they contact you for consultation?
Absolutely, absolutely. Go to my webpage is easyestatedocs.com, and I'll spell it easy, E-A-S-Y, estate, E-S-T-A-T-E, docs, D-O-C-S.com.
Okay.
Go there, and then you can contact me on that page. It's got my phone number, which is 623-312-2789. It's got my email address, which is info@leahgavin.com. Any one of those three ways you can reach me. And I will send you a free gift of a recording of the myths about estate planning, the missteps about estate planning, so that you can learn how to leave a legacy love letter to your family.
Okay, that sounds excellent. We'll put that information in our BIB radio page. Miss Leah Gavin, everybody, we thank you for joining us tonight. We will talk to you again next week. And thank you for joining us. Good night.
Thank you.